Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. You can also stream our services online on our website, on our YouTube channel, and our church app. We invite you to check out our website at GoStonebridge.com and give us a like on Facebook at Facebook.com/GoStonebridge.
This week, Pastor Steve Bradley continues our series, Vertical Love. Now here's Pastor Steve.
All right, good morning. So this is kind of, one of those seated sessions for us. And some of you know this young man. We put the youngest on the end. This is Peter Samolich and his son David. Would you welcome Peter and David Samolich?
Thank you.
They don't speak English, so I will translate. I'm just kidding.
Spasiba.
Здравствуйте. Mi melen kipereshki.
Маленький большой.
Okay. That was all the Russian I know. So I'm really in a lot of trouble. So if you know that Peter, we partner with Peter and work with him in Riga, Latvia. And Joni and I have been many times to Riga. And the name of the church is the Salvation
Temple.
I always have a hard time with Salvation Temple. I don't know why, but Peter always has to remind me of the name of the church. In fact, I'll tell you the funny story. Last time Joni and I went, a car picked us up, which could be a bad thing. You know, you want to make sure who you're getting a car with. And look at David saying, yeah, that was not a very smart move. And we were held for hostage for three. No, okay, that was a different story. And so car picked us up, and I told him, the guy asked, why we were here and what we're doing. I said, well, I'm going to see a friend of mine who's a pastor. He has a church named Peter Samolich. He said, oh, yeah, I know Peter. I said, really? You know Peter? Said, yes, I'll take you to Peter's church. So he took us to St. Peter's Cathedral. And as usual, I said, no, and I couldn't remember the name of the church. And I'm going like, okay, so maybe this is his church. And so we went in, and I did tell the guy, I said, no, this Peter is still alive. And he's still working and functioning, and he is. And if you know, this past Christmas, we had a chance to join with Peter and help him with. He loves to give presents and gifts to orphans, and it's just one of those wonderful things about Peter. A different place, a different culture, but he has his heart for it. So, Peter, I'm gonna let you grab this. So, why is it that it is so important to you to reach out to those orphanages and all those kids during Christmas time?
First, because my father, he was orphan. My father, he never see his mom, and he was complete orphan when his dad died. He was 12 years old, and he was a street boy. Of course, growing in the street, he was alcoholic. And only when he was 22 years old, some friend who's remembered from when he was small, who already was Christian, he came and invited him to church, underground church in forest, and when he walking, you know how quickly work alcoholic, drunk man. If some Christian go by and they say, why he took a smelly, looky, ugly man to church? The Christian people say, and my father wanna go back, but young man, he helped him, say, no, go with me. Jesus changed your life. And the reason we're working with orphanage, because we know Jesus can change life. And gift, open heart. And thank you everyone who invest to orphan life, sending money for Christmas gift.
And we have pictures, I think, don't we? Are we going to have some pictures pop up? There we go. These are some of the, there's Peter on the left. And you can go ahead and go through those slides.
Yeah, and I visit myself four different orphanage. We sponsor 200 kids. And when our team play with children, I went to see principal, and we sit down and talk. And she opened me her heart. We came not only with gift, we came with Bible. We bring every child a Bible. And we bring every teacher Bible in orphanage. And she took me to her office, and she opened her heart. She said, 10 years ago, I was young, stupid girl.
We can relate.
Yeah, I don't know if you have this girl in America or not, but we still have in Latvia. And she says she came home from nightclub, but it was nice night, but she came home. She said, always when I came home, I'm lonely and I don't want to leave. And this night, she cut her van, right? And she's sitting in the shower, you know, bleeding, and she died. But she rent an apartment, and owner, she came open apartment, just she never came before. And she found her almost dead. She called ambulance and sent to hospital. She was 2 days in intensive therapy, and she came back to her room in hospital. And she said, in this room, there was a Bible. She said, in 2 days, she read in Bible and accept Christ. She said, what you doing, I want to support, because I know the Bible changed my life, and the Bible can change all these kids and my teacher life. Mm. And praise God for everyone who supported our ministry, and now our goal to save a young life. Mm. Save life.
That's
life.
A great word.
The Bible. And I always, when I come to Stonebridge, I sell and share, you know. You never lose. We make 100%. When you give money for Bible, give Bible for Christmas gift, you always have reward from God.
Mm, that's great. And David is, where do you fall in the stack of kids?
I'm the last one.
The last one. On purpose? Okay, it was for, and David, so all of your siblings are in the United States, right?
Yes, and they were born in Latvia.
They were born in Latvia, and they're here. And you were born in?
Oregon.
Oregon. And so, yeah, so that, y'all don't know, internationally, there's a trade system. So David had to go, no, okay. But why would you go back, except, I mean, you can tell you met someone there too also, but why would you want to go back to Latvia?
Well, like you mentioned, I met my future wife in Latvia, and I had to go back.
And she is a lovely young lady, so I understand why he went back. He was hooked, so.
But I just realized that all the work that has been done, and I've seen so many lives changed, I just felt like I really wanted to be part of that. Mm. Me, my wife, and all the kids that used to be campers, now we are leading camp, and these are the camps that your teams were sent out to. So we are the fruit of the things that you've been doing in camp.
So one of the things is, years ago, how were you when we first started going to camp there? You were
probably 13.
Yeah, little. And so they also have summer camps. Peter's, you know, got so many irons in the fire. He does all these different summer camps, and I know we helped paint the buildings and help outfit and do all this, and a bunch of our teenagers went over there, and some of them are now going back as adults to help with the camps. And so I know that this is for you because it's a new generation, and you have a passion for that. And the summer's not real long there.
No, so, it's probably from mid-July to beginning of August.
Okay, so really, it's that's the way it is here too, just to let you know.
Really?
Now
it's summer already.
So I know that one of the other things, because I wanted to give you a chance to do this also, we helped Peter purchase a piece of property near Vesma Gravis, and it's right across the street. You will not be able to see this in the picture, but pop the picture up there. So the brown building is an old house. In fact, it has a history to it also, which is really interesting. We don't have time for all that one, but it has a real history to it. Peter and a bunch of his crew and one guy who's just an unbelievable crafts young man for houses, they outfitted this thing, rebuilt it, new heating. You can't see it, and there was a basement in that brown house with this incredible, you know, hydraulic trap door that opens and the stairs go down. And I always, growing up, thought Herman Munster would come up, you know, because it looks like it. And it's the coolest room down in what was the basement before, and they've turned it into to this. And then next door to that, there's still more property. I know Peter's dream has always been to build a church next door so that across the street, what you can't see on this architect's rendering is if you were to stand on those buildings and look the other way, you would see what?
9-story apartment building where 50,000 people live.
50,000 Russians live across the street in the apartments across
and
the street.
This is the first evangelical church will be for 50,000 people, and they will be first church will built in 100 years in Riga.
Wow. Is that amazing? I mean, that is just absolutely incredible.
I want to thank you. Thank you, Pastor Steve, for this loan partnership, the big investment in Latvia, Latvian people. And we believe when we preach Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. we preach that Jesus was born baby, he grew, he preached, he was crucified, and he died. But the main reason why he died, because he will resurrect. Mm-hmm. And when we preach, we always believe, when we give Bible to people, we planting seeds, and we believe for resurrection, that every seed will grow and give fruit. And I kind of want to encourage everyone at church, please help us. Help us with this vision. Help us with teacher conference mm-hmm. in October. Come and teach 250 teachers from public school. Help us.
To summer give camps.
Yes, thank you for sending another team. Chris used to be part of the older teams, and now he's leading a new team. So again, this is the fruit of all of this. So thank you very much.
And we always accept support for 1,000 Bible, what we give in public school. And I think we have videos some where we give gift, where we give Bible in public school. Today in Latvia, we still give Bible in public school. Mm. When you want to invest to God's kingdom, this is the best investment. Bible. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for Peter. In fact, let me pray for them and pray for this. Lord, we just thank you for your great love and just thank you for this partnership that you have given us with Peter and with David and so many others there because there's a like-mindedness, just different locations. And we do pray you would continue to bless them and lead them. And Lord, we just pray that you would use us as you see fit to help them as they do this and as they reach more and more teachers and campers and kids and more people in the city of Riga, Latvia, all to the glory of your son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Thanks again. Thanks, guys, for coming. Yes, let me keep one. Hey, aren't they good? So if you want to help participate with them, just to let you know, because someone will always come up afterwards and say, can I help buy Bibles? Absolutely, you can. If you just mark it for us so that we know that's what you're giving the money for, we wire the money to Riga, Latvia. If you want to help with, I know Peter, one of his next steps is getting an architect to work and design the building that will be there, the church building. If you want to help with those expenses, you know, I know he would love to have you help with that or anything else with him. And we will wire the money, all of the money directly to him in Riga, Latvia. So we're talking about vertical love. And just to let you know, we're going to be here a while because I have a lot to go through. No, I'm just kidding. It'll be pretty fast. But hopefully the title this morning sort of caught your attention when you look at it. You know, can you save or can you rescue a failed relationship? Because in one way, that's one of the things we're all, you know, looking for. Last week we talked about familiar love or family love. And it's a wonderful thing. You love the people that you're around. You love the people that you're used to doing life with. It's what makes the church family because we're around each other. We're involved in each other's lives. Really important. But the problem is sometimes those relationships don't go well. Sometimes in a marriage, the relationships don't go well. And the question is always, why is it that they fall apart? And can they be rescued? Can you redeem, rescue, put back together those relationships? Let me go ahead and say, I understand that it happens. I know that not every relationship can be fixed or rescued or saved. It just doesn't happen. But the question is it possible? Is there a way to do this? And I think if we take an honest look at it, you can gather more hope and more of a plan or a pattern. I'm going to do that. I'm not going to give you three steps and say, if you do these three steps, your every relationship will never fail in your life. Okay, maybe I will do that. But, you know, I understand that it doesn't always work out that way because it's a very real thing in our lives. But let me put up a statement for you also. In fact, would you read this with me? Many times, say this part with me. Many times, the most powerful things are found in the most difficult and what? And that's just a reality. We go through pains. We go through struggles. Everyone does. And I know that we feel like, God, why do you let us go through pain and difficulties and struggles? Well, because there is a contrast in life that is found in those struggles. If everything went well for you, if everything went your way, I know I'm that way too. I think, well, wouldn't life be wonderful? Maybe not. Because things go well for us. Let's just be honest. Our country is the most prosperous country the world, the universe has ever seen. Does everything go well for us? Don't go turn on, you know, one of the news networks, you know, when you go home, because you will see we still don't get along, you know. We still struggle. And the idea of all of our circumstances going well, making us happier and making it easier for us to get along is just not true. But in contrast, when things don't go right, when we're in pain, when we're in difficult situations, it is in those times, in those situations, that many times we reach down to try to find something better, deeper, and stronger. And he takes us to those places for that reason. I was listening to Craig Groeschel. I don't know if you ever know who Craig Groeschel is. Listen to Craig Groeschel. He was talking about marriage and starting his series on it. And he started talking about he and his wife and how wonderful it is and how it's a great marriage. And it's been better than he expected. And he went on this glowing. And even as I listened to it, you may be saying the same thing listening to me. I said, I don't know if I'd do that because it just makes everyone else say, well, so poor me, my marriage is not, or my relationships are not. Yeah, that's what it felt like. Then after he did all that, he went to the other side. And he went through all of the struggles and the difficulties and the fights and how and all the things that they have gone through for longer than he did the other side to let us understand and to help people understand. But it doesn't get there the way that you think. And it's never without conflict. And it's never without difficulties. And it's never without struggles. And so someone has told you that's the way it's supposed to be, or maybe growing up and you saw one of the Disney movies and it was like live happy. It doesn't work that way. It has never worked that way. If there's anyone out there that says it has with me, I would love to have a chance to talk with you and listen to you because it just doesn't work that way. And we usually look for these plateaus and these feelings and these emotions, say, that's going to do it, and that's going to take me over the top, and that will never go away. And if you watch Hollywood channels, right, that's what you see a lot of times because that's the business they're in. And then two or three years later, you find out, and now they're totally separated and it's going a different direction because it just doesn't work that way. Love, God's kind of love, what makes it so important and so powerful is that it's able to take you through the most difficult things, the most difficult things. Psalm 23, David's psalm, right? What does David say? Yea, though I walk through the what? The valley of the shadow of death. He's talking about this for them, you know, this valley would be a ravine, no sunlight, dark. There's, you know, it's over. I'm never coming out of this. That's the picture that David is trying to paint. Yea, though I walk through that, I will fear no evil. Why? There's a reason. Why? For thou art with me. Yeah. It's in those places that you find out and you realize just how much God really is with you, and it takes away, in the end, the fear that this is doom and gloom and it will never recover. It is not that way. when God is with us. Now, let me take you real quickly. I said I've got a lot to cover, and I do, so I'm going to work real quickly through this. This is Warren Wiersbe. I took a quote from his commentary on 1 Corinthians, which is called Be Wise. It's a wonderful commentary. And just to let you know, in the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, when Paul does what is called the love chapter, you have to accept it and take it in its context. Otherwise, it just becomes a poem or a song or some sort of platitude emotionally that it loses the realism of what it really meant. Here's what Wiersbe says about 1 Corinthians 13. He says, many people fail to see that Paul was still dealing with the Corinthians' problems when he wrote these words. Because all 12 chapters before that, Paul is dealing with the problems, and they were huge. There were so many of them with the Corinthian church. Even though they were talented, they were rich, they were in the crossroads of all culture, this is one of the most prosperous places in his day that existed on the earth, and yet their problems were enormous. It took him 12 chapters at this point to deal with them, and he's not done. So he goes on to say, here they are. Their problems, he wrote of these: the abuse of the gift of tongues, division in the church, envy of others' gifts, of their giftedness, selfishness, remember the lawsuits, Wiersbe says, impatience with one another in the public meetings, and behavior that was disgracing the Lord. And he's just barely touching on it. It was much worse than this. And one of the biggest problems they had is they tended to rank things according to how they wanted to rank them and what was more important. They heavily leaned toward all of the things that made them feel good about themselves. Anyone guilty? Sure. Because we like feeling good about ourselves. That's how they rank things. Paul tended to rank them as what was the most important thing was what helped the group grow and was good for the other people. And they were in constant conflict of this. Here's what it says at the end of chapter 12. Paul says, are we all apostles? Are we all prophets? Are we all teachers? He is ranking them as he does this, as he did in the section before this. Do we all have the power of miracles? Do we all have the gift of healing? Do we all have the ability to speak in unknown languages? Do we all have the ability to interpret unknown languages? Of course not. So you should earnestly desire the most helpful gifts. Not talking about to you personally. He's talking about to the group. And then he adds this, and I love this phrase. He says, but now let me show you a way of life that is best of all. And that's what he's trying to show them. It is love from God, a gift, it is. But love is more than an emotion, a feeling, a thing. He's trying to show them that God was trying to teach us a way of life that we call love. Or in this case, it's the word agape, that we call love. And this way of life that he's trying to teach us, he says literally it means here, the greater of all. That's the Greek word. It is the greater of all, this way of life. So here, four things real quickly. First of all, we naturally orient ourselves toward the things that make us, say it with me again, make us what? Feel better about ourselves. Sure we do. We all do. It's part of our self-centeredness. It's part of the way we tend to see our lives, even while destroying our most important relationships. There's something wrong with that, isn't there? That we would orient ourselves toward the things that make us feel better about ourselves, but somehow there's a blindness in our lives that these things that we chase and that we want to pursue, and that's got to be the very best, can actually be destructive toward the most important relationships that we have in life. And then we wake up one day and we say, I don't understand why I feel so bad. Why didn't it work out the way I thought it was going to work out? Because we chase the wrong, what Paul says, the wrong way in life. And here's the reality. It's natural for us. We all do it. The Bible calls it our corrupt, fallen, old nature, our sinfulness. We tend to be self-destructive. We did a series several years ago called Unlearn Unlove, because we naturally do these things. And we have to stop doing these things and replace them with other things if we're going to build the relationships that we really want. If our relationships are going to be healthy and strong and supportive, we have to change those actions, that way of life, if we're going to do that. But, you know, I know what people think. I know how people feel about it. In fact, here's one of the constant comments that I read or that I hear. You will hear it too if you haven't. Sometimes from some well-meaning people. Here's the thought process. But if I do the things I like, if I pursue the things that I want in life, I will feel good about myself. If I feel good about myself, I will be happy. If I am happy, everyone around me will be what? What? Everyone around me will be what? But that's what we think, and it sounds right because it supports the notion that I can do whatever I want and I should just pursue what I want in life. But the equation doesn't work. It doesn't work. You can pursue everything you want. It will make you happy, and in the long run, everybody around you will be what? Miserable. Yeah, because life is all about you, and relationships can't work that way. It's one of my favorite stories. Somebody reminded me of it yesterday that I told my daughter when she was, I forgot what grade it was, but she was way underclassmen at a school, and she decided to go out for cheerleading, and she was so worried about making cheerleading, and so she got, you know, she went out, and all of a sudden it came back, and she came back, and she was just beaming, and she not only made cheerleader, she was the head cheerleader, even though she was an underclassman. And she was so excited. She felt so good about herself. And I told her, I said, now, Jamie, let me explain something to you. You may be happy. You may be excited. Those other girls are not. Right? Right? Is it a reality? And see, the problem is we don't necessarily see it that way. We are so prone to be self-centered, we don't see it that way. Now, just to let you know, she went to school the next day and she came back and said, you were right. And I said, yeah, absolutely. That's not the way it works. But we think it works this way. I was on a TV program years and years ago with talking about single adults, which is what I did for the longest time. And there was a psychologist there and saying exactly the same thing and teaching this to people. If you would just pursue what makes you happy and do all the things that make you happy, all of your relationships and your marriage and your children will be so happy and so wonderful because you are happy. That is baloney. It is. It's not that people don't want you to be happy. It's the pursuing what you want and your desires and just chasing after those things. I'm not saying you shouldn't do some of the things you like. I'm not saying you shouldn't have goals that you chase after. But if that's your simple formula, it is a simple formula for disaster. This is exactly what the Corinthians did. And they were so wealthy and so prosperous and so well known that they felt like, and what is wrong with that? Why shouldn't we live life this way? Why shouldn't we do this? Well, the pain now that they were going through, Paul recognized, here's my chance. Here's my opportunity to help rescue them, help change them. In fact, let me give you just two verses, not out of 1 Corinthians 13. Here's what James says. He says, my brethren, catch this. If any among you strays from the truth and one turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his ways, catch this, will save his what? Yeah. That he will save this part of him that he wants saved, but he doesn't know how to save unless someone turns him from the error of his way. He will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins, failures, bad behavior, even though you might even think the behavior is bad. Or look, here's what Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8. He says, most important of all, continue to show deep love for each other. Now, you got to define what that means. Deep love for each other. And why? He says, because love covers what? A multitude of sins, a multitude of failures. This is why it's so important to understand what Paul is saying. Paul is going to go to the way that covers, the way that rescues, the way that fixes it. And it's not what you think. It's not, you know, create a new romance. It's not, you know, buy your mate a new car. All of those things are wonderful things, but all of them are just temporary. They don't last very long. He's going to go to behavior, how you treat someone. What's most important in that actually edifies, builds up the other person. Most of the time, to the sacrifice of yourself in order to do this. So here's what it says. This is verse number one. If I could speak all the languages of earth and of angels, but didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. This is very pointed because they loved this idea of speaking in what we call speaking in tongues or other languages. This was so important to them. And he said, okay, if I do that, if you can do that, but you don't understand the way, if you don't get it about loving other people and how important that is, do you see the contrast? You'll be all puffed up. Yeah, you'll feel great about yourself. But everything that's important, everything that's going to support you, everything that would feed and nurture your soul gets lost in the middle of it. Most of us would look at that and say, okay, I get that, but it gets worse. He gets even more touchy. He said, if I have the gift of prophecy, so now he's going to what he would consider more important gifts. If I have the gift of prophecy and if I understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge and if I had such faith that I could move mountains, but he said, but I didn't love others. Guess what? He says, I would be nothing. Whoa. So he just didn't go after what they thought was important. Paul is talking about what he thinks is important also. But he said, all these things which sound so wonderful, and it sounds like if I could do these things, everybody would love me. I would be so happy. He says, it wouldn't work. Because if I didn't have love, if I didn't show love, he said, I wouldn't be anything. And then he goes to the next verse, verse 3, he says, if I gave everything, this is really gets tough. If I gave everything I have to the poor and even sacrifice my body, I became a martyr, you know, for a cause. I could boast about it, but if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. Wow. Paul, you're saying that even if you sacrificed yourself, right? Giving up of yourself. He said, yes, but if you do that, and it does happen, people, you know, take on a cause or whatever, and it's not motivated by caring and loving. It's motivated by them taking on a cause and them being a martyr. Anybody know any living martyrs? Yeah, I mean, right? I mean, sometimes we do that. And listen, religious people can be one of the worst at that. But didn't love other people. He said, it wouldn't have made anything better or helped or worked. Love makes everything else better. It does. Love makes everything else better. But love has to be pursued first. It has to be the motivating factor. Here's number three. Love makes everyone else more valuable. And this is what he's going to talk about in this next section. In fact, I want you to grasp this more than anything else, because this is the agape love that people talk about and they hear about, but do not understand. They just don't get it. They don't understand what it is. I was listening to an interview with a guy with an atheist professor, and the atheist professor was a religious product going to seminaries, education, and the sad thing about listening to him speak with this professor who had lost his way and turned a different way is the guy still didn't get it. He didn't understand. He still saw it as, what is it that I need to do? If I do that, I get to go to heaven. If I do this, I'm going to hell. That's the only way he saw it. And he never understood it. And the guy speaking with him tried to help him understand it. He never got it. He never could figure it out because he only looked at what gets me what I want. And he missed the whole thing. So I want you to listen to this. And I want you to try as best you can to grasp this, because this is so important. This is the foundation for every relationship. And without this, you can try every friendship, marriage, romance, everything you want. Without this, they all crumble and fail, which is the opposite of what most people think about agape love or Christian love. Most people think it's the peak of something. It's not. It's the foundation of everything, because this is the way God Himself loves. Here's what it says. Love is, in fact, you can boil it down to this. Love is, say it with me, love is patient. Love is patient. Love is kind. Now, he's going to define that with some negative statements here. And here's his definition. In fact, you might want to write this down, or his description of patience, because this may be the most important thing you grasp from today. Here's what patience is. Patience is this capacity that you learn, this capacity to be wronged and not retaliate. And you have to learn this. No one is born with this. It's this capacity to be wronged and not retaliate. And if you don't learn this kind of patience, if you can't practice this kind of patience, this is the patience that Jesus himself demonstrated and lived out. This is the patience that God himself, through Jesus, showed us is what makes love work. This is what makes it work. It's this capacity that you learn to be wronged and not retaliate. Don't confuse. If you're a quiet person, and you are a person, you know, that doesn't have a lot of reaction to anything, and maybe you're married to someone that's the opposite. They always react. Do not confuse personality trait with real patience. Because I know people, my wife would tell you, I am one of those. Yeah, he's really nice and sweet, but when you get home, he is stubborn, right? It's in all of us. It is a learned trait. It has nothing to do with your natural personality or who you are. Love is patient and kind. Let me show you why I say that, because look what he says next. He says, love is not jealous. It's not boastful. It's not proud. It's not, say the last one to me, it's not what? Oh man, don't you hate that? Okay, there's a place for rudeness sometimes, but right? That's not what motivates love. Jealousy, boastfulness, pride, rudeness, those are not motivations for love. Now, they are naturally for us. If we are offended, we want to be a little rude, right? We want to have some pride. And there's a good pride in life. But when these things take over, it takes us away from what love is really all about. Look at the next part. He says, it does not demand its own way. Ooh, man. It's not irritable. Man, that irritates me just reading that. Just to let you know. I mean, man. And here, it keeps no record of being what? Oh, is that hard? Because we have good memories when those memories hurt. But love decides, you know what? I'm not going to keep a record of those wrongs. It is a characteristic of God that is absolutely amazing. It's not that God has a bad memory. It's that God chooses not to keep those records. God chooses to move on to something better. God chooses because of who you are, the fact that he loves you, he made you, that's who you are, and who he is, he teaches a different way of love. Because God wants to rescue every relationship. Doesn't mean they all get rescued, but God wants to rescue every relationship. He says in verse 6, it does not rejoice in injustice. See, we have a tendency to rejoice in injustice if it fits what we want, if it benefits us. He says, no. Love doesn't do that. He says, but rejoices whenever what wins out? Whenever what? Yeah, because love understands. If you don't have truth, if it's not grounded in truth, it's not going to last anyway. It's a lie if it's not grounded in truth. He says in verse 7, catch this, and it all fits if you put all this together, why he says this. Love never what? Yeah, why would love give up? Because love is not basing it on the circumstances or what you did or how many times you've hurt me. Love never gives up. No, not this way of life never gives up. Love never loses what? Faith. Love is always hopeful. It's always filled with hope. Even in the most difficult circumstances, love is still just motivated by this hope ahead. Why? Because this is built on who God is and God's character. Will God lose? Will God fail? Absolutely not. Love is still always hopeful, hanging on. And he goes on to say, it endures through every, and we probably should put here every difficult circumstance, everything that's difficult. The last thing is love positions us
for eternity. Because this is God's preparation. This is God wanting to teach us a different way, to rescue our marriages, to rescue our friendships. And it means it will cost you to do this. But the cost of not learning the way of love is so much greater. It will cost you everything. So this price that you pay, just like Jesus paid a price, it is temporary in light of what matters forever and what will last forever. So let me just read this last section for you. Here's what he says. He says, prophecy and speaking in unknown languages and special knowledge will become useless. But love will last how long? Forever. Verse 9, now our knowledge is partial and incomplete, and even the gift of prophecy reveals only part of the whole picture. Right, no one has complete knowledge. But when full understanding comes, these partial things will become useless. That means, so you want to go after the part that's not just temporary, go for the way that that lasts forever. Look at verse 11, when I was a child. So he's just kind of applying it to, you know, how we would relate going up in life. When I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child. Sure, I did. But when I grew up, I put what behind me? Yeah, childish ways. I realized there's a better way. I'm not going to pursue, you know, just what I chased when I was. I know more now. I understand what's more important. Verse 12, now we see things imperfectly as in a cloudy mirror, but then we will see everything with perfect clarity. That's coming. All that I know now is partial and incomplete, but then I will know everything completely, just as God knows me completely. That's a powerful statement. Because what Paul is saying is the reason God teaches you this way, and the reason he wants you to understand and pay the price to learn this way, is because God knows you. He knows your life. He knows the possibilities of what could be ahead. So he's trying to teach what seems impractical to us, what seems to go against our grain. It does go against our grain. What seems to fly in the face of our own self-centeredness, he is teaching us a better, a more powerful, and an eternal. It means it has a future. It's going to take us to the future, a way of life. He says, verse 13, you know this part, three things will last forever. Faith, what? Third one, and of course it makes sense, doesn't it? And the greatest of these is what? Yeah, of course it is. Love is greater than faith. Love is greater than hope. Because love is a way that takes us in a direction that we really want to go. We're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper. And as we do, would you pray with me as we prepare? Heavenly Father, we thank you that this was often called in their day the love dinner, the place where they would come together to remember just how much they were loved, just how much you were willing to pay to send your own son to this earth, to sacrifice himself, to give up himself, to go through pain, difficulty, insult. And rather than hang on to those things, he chose to take those things upon himself because he loved us, and so that he could set us free.